I'm sorry that whoever's editing this has to cut around all of my coughs. Or don't.
I was about to say that you're assuming that they're going to cut around.
Yeah, Casey,
them.
Bring those up.
Mm. Crank the coughs.
Turn up my coughs.
Jonnet, I think the realization comes as your body starts to inform you that that prickling feeling is localized around your palm, and you look down and you see how the lines of the universe of the pocket space are connected to something in the outside world, an anchor, a tether that has been tied to you. But not by you. In the center of your palm is a black spot connected to a sickly and awful tendril, a part of the universe that looks warped and contorted. The Mariner's Mark. You feel Wei's memory fade away, and rushing in like a tidal wave, cold seawater fills this space. As you can see in the distance, the skies here redden, clouds gather overhead, and ghost light fill the horizon. It is not a metaphor. It is not a memory. You feel it and know it to be true. The Mariner is here.
Jonnet is taking this in. I think any kind of... I mean, it's not to say that the kid is numb right now, but also there is a little bit of like a... What's one more thing going on in his mind? Where it's like, all right, this is a space where... However we got to the pocket space, it has proven to be a space where like... The hard thing is the only thing. And then in feeling the water, kind of like the water at his feet, that soggy sensation like creep up like your pant leg. And then it's like looking at his hand, it's a level of dread on top of already like this desperation of like trying to figure out what's wrong with him. And seeing the, I guess, the reddened skies, I think he just turns to Teacher Wei and probably gives a similar thing where it's like, I think we have to get out of here. Do you feel this? And he kind of gestures to the ground where I think probably Jonnet feels water, and he's probably looking for confirmation. And it's like, this is real for me. Is this real for you too?
Yes, I can feel it.
And then... how easy or hard is it for other people or beings to get in here?
I don't know, but whatever this thing is, it seems very powerful. Should we exit, or is that even possible? It feels like it's moving really fast. Maybe we have no choice.
Look, I don't know. This is not my rule book, all right? This is your home court.
There will be no escape.
I think we have no choice.
Yeah.
But to face this.
The universe ripples and echoes as you can feel the tangled mass that is the essence of the Mariner, that cancerous creature that weaves itself into so many victims, puppeteers them across the land to spread nothing but misery, woe, and imprisonment, the hate of the sea. You can feel it encroach and close in around you as you can see the being rise out of the sea, the skeletal creature made of barnacles and encrusted things from the depths build itself out of this reeking fluid, stepping forward, a being that was born on an island made of shipwrecks and the bones of drowned sailors, to do one thing: hate the land and bury all who dwell on it. And it stands before you now, Wei and Jonnet. It stands before you as it stood before you in Bujaneeth. We can see the echoes of that moment, this being with maelstroms at its back, bearing down on you an entire city where you and Quan stood together against its fury. We see it echoed in your experience in Nordia, where it was you and your friends and the brave crew of the Uhuru who stood against a small fleet invading a helpless village, where it was just you between them and destruction. The power that came from this creature's limbs as they rained blows down on you and Orimar, who struggled against them, even with the power of a deathless body. And now it is before you once more.
You've burned so much of yourself to strike at me. You can burn all you like, but soon there will be nothing left to tear away. And I will claim what remains. I am inevitability. I am the sea that will claim and bury the land. And you are nothing.
Wow.
I think Jonnet doesn't move. Jonnet doesn't change his gaze out from out towards where the mariner and the mariner's voice is emanating from, but out of the side of his mouth, he's just like, "You might want to work on a way to get out of here sooner than later.
This happened a lot to you?
More than I would like.
Great.
Jonnet's just like thinking, Jonnet is using context clues and just wheeling off the top of his head, and while you're at it, if you could remember a drier time, someplace landlocked, that would be really helpful. And so Jonnet is going to start like walking. Actually, no, he's going to take two steps forward, maybe like putting him distance wise, like two steps closer than Teacher Wei, where the Mariner is. And while he's saying this, he's going to be trying to think very hard about Acheron.
We're not going home till the war is done.
I think you use the verbiage of burned. I've burned so much.
I, Corsair, could you not feel it? Could you not feel the absence of what used to be yours? What used to be a part of yourself that you no longer hold? You cast it away. You cast it away to save the lives of folk who would sooner spit on you than save you.
You know, for somebody that is the embodiment of the darkness of the sea, I feel like you... sometimes you don't understand how it works. Yes, I cast away something important to me. I gave it to the sea. I gave it to whoever. I don't care. But what I got back is what I will use to end you. And with that, Jonnet is going to imagine the mainland. He's going to imagine his home, and I think he's going to start walking forward and kind of like a little too off the shoulders, like, hey, no requirement. If you got any dry stuff in your mind, use it now. Feel free to take. You don't have to walk with me, but I'm heading this direction.
Yeah, I think that Wei is also thinking about their homeland prior to, I believe, the immigration.
And I think with like every step, and I imagine this like kind of functioning as it did when we first got to the pocket space, where when realities were kind of building, there was like this divide between Wei's memories and Jonnet's, and we just kind of just so happened to choose Jonnet's first. But like with every step forward, there's like, you know, dry land kind of emerging to meet Jonnet's feet underneath, and that sort of starts to build out and become like this, I would say, like half of a dome that stretches out until it probably meets a point where the Mariner is manifesting there, like the water. And then I feel like it meets a point where it meets Teacher Wei's manifestation of hopefully dry land. And so there is this like landmass that is expanding, maybe more so in the directions in which it's not directly hitting the Mariners, but there are probably like a little jankier, a little like rougher around the edges, like embodiments of, there's the front porch of Jonnet's house, there's like half of the house walls, most of the fence that runs along the fields, but like they are more warbly than they have any right to be, but they are there and they are tangible and they're taking up space. And as he's walking, it's slowly starting to expand. I don't know how much you know about the world outside of your sea, but I have been given a gift of sight, and I've seen what I will do. So I will tell you right now. And at right now, that dome expands more rapidly, and we see kind of like the draw distance, if we're talking like an open world game like Grand Theft Auto or something like that, the draw distance gets like even farther, and we see like more of Acheron than we have like in memories past. But I will tell you right now, I will not die today. What's more, you are not hunting me. And that, with that, the world, the land expands more. And then we start to see there is a range, a hill range in the far off distance of Acheron. And it's kind of, you have to clear this range in order to get to the clearing that is Acheron. So travelers and merchants would make this journey all the time. And it was one of those things where it was just like a known part of the route to and from this town. And so we see it. You are not hunting me. I am coming for you. And at that, the range starts to get closer than it has ever been, has any right to be.
And the Mariner, like, we can see the land pushing back against the sea. We can see Acheron bleeding in. The Mariner looms forward.
Wistful arrogance will bring you nothing but pain.
And the Mariner jerks one of their tendrils, and you can feel your arm afflicted with the mark move without your control. You swing, and water rises from the ground like fire and starts to consume beloved things. You can see the echoes of Zana, the echoes of your father, the echoes of people that you can't seem to remember be consumed by the sea. Their shouts and screams start to swim around you as an anguishing numb rolls over your arm. It is cold and it is resolute. It pulls you under and makes it difficult to breathe. Teacher Wei, seeing this, what do you do?
I want to support Jonnet and use my power to help. I don't know how I would go about it.
Describe what you want to happen, and we'll make it happen.
Well, let's see. Teacher Wei has the ability to manipulate and purify water. So I think it makes sense for Teacher Wei to use the waterbending ability and put a lot of focus into pushing the water away, as is happening right now. The water is approaching and threatening to consume the land, but now the land is pushing back against the water. It just needs that extra strength. And so with Teacher Wei's power and strength, they lend a helping hand in using waterbending to push that water back.
Yeah, Jonnet asked for memories of dry land, but the thing that is so important to recognize and know about the liquid swords, they are not afraid to grab hold of the water. Mm. And when they do, they control it.
And so, yeah, Wei flexes their water bending. Wei moves the water in ways that Jonnet has never seen a human be able to do, or rarely seen a human be able to do. It looks like a force of nature.
Yeah, they're humans. Most of them cannot move the water. That is something that Jonnet learned from Adrian back in Nordia. The only things that Jonnet has seen move the water, they were the Mariner's Heralds. La Llorona pulling the river up the steps of Nordia to bring in the drowned sailors from the sea to destroy and to pillage. La Llorona throwing blades of water, drowning Jonnet on the very land. But here, we can see in a very real sense, in the sense of the universe and raw creation itself, we can see the sea. And what makes the sea? And that the sea has water in it, but the sea is not the water. And almost easily, almost without effort, Wei tears the sea away from the water and holds the water under their own power. And that pain that was racking Jonnet, that flaming, boiling water that was consuming the things that Jonnet loves, falls away into harmless and pure pools. Jonnet, you're bolstered once more. What do you do?
I think at that there's like a moment of like the Mariner's Mark reaching its way up into Jonnet's body is definitely like a, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And then like the oh shit is gone and it's like a, oh, 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 that was you?
Yes, it was.
Keep that up. Jonnet starts like, like running forward. he takes two big steps forward to like bring the earth like kind of like closer, further out, and then I think the vision of Acheron becomes like even clearer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've got the sense of Zana and Douglas, and I think the best that it will ever get is if like there is a figure that is 2 inches taller than Douglas. It's like if you took a Polaroid, not a classic Polaroid, like these new instant photos, the way that they work, like the whole color and all that stuff, but if you get them wet, it blotches out almost immediately. And so there is the frame of a person, but like the pixels are way bigger than they have any right to be. The colors are blotched. It's mostly like white gray mess, but there is something there. And all three of these fixtures are kind of like focusing out towards the sea. And as we like sort of see a more resolute Jonnet we see this range that was far and then less far. It might be a trick of the camera on a very tight, long lens, or it could just be that this range is truly at Wei and Teacher's back, but we see these stones, like, behind him.
Yeah, I think, Jonnet, as you are stepping forward, maybe you don't even know, but you are growing. You're getting taller. You are stepping into the vision of the man that you know you will be. The weight hits you in a way that you almost don't feel, as you can see your Kusarigama in your hand. The farmer's tool, the thing that comes from a humble place, that is forged into a weapon that can overturn anything oppressive. A weapon that, as long as it is wielded alongside all of the things that make a community strong, it can overturn any threat. The mountain bolsters you at your back. The bit of land that meets the sky and becomes the sky.
So Jonnet kind of like holds up like his hand with the mariner's mark. And I imagine it's like the seawater is gone, but I feel like there's still like that pull. So we see like his hand is very flexed and it's like actively pulling back from the mariner's pull. And so he says, you want me and I'm not afraid of you. Okay? Do you hear me? I am not afraid of you.
Do you hear yourself, Corsair? You don't fear me. You who shiver and shake at my very thought. You who would burn yourself away rather than face me as what you are. You don't fear me. Then you know nothing. I will show you fear. I will show you what you will be.
I've already seen what I will be. You see me, and I see you. You are the mariner. You are the end all. You are the sea. But I am a mountain.
Hold tight to the hairs you've grown, to the airs you've sown. You flow. Go.
I am a mountain. Raise my hands, I scrape the sky. Hell of a guy, but you can tell by the look in my eye. I am the land, I am eternal, I am divine. And I still be standing after all of my enemies die. I'm not speaking ill of the dead, but I'm tilting my head. And I'm seeing blue while they're seeing red. With all that said, you know that it's true, so what in the holy fuck led you to think I would be threatened of you? I have the heart of a storm, you are a breeze, you are not threatening me. I am a monument to a holy moment, you are a piece of debris. Damn, I'm putting up numbers, I'm an accountant, you are a book that I've read and renounced. You're just a look, I am a sound, my purpose cannot be pronounced. I'm an announcement, a plea for you to be different, but will you listen? Ha, I doubt it, you dunk your feet at the foot of my fountain. I am not bluffing, you are just padding, you are just stuffing, I am a mountain. And you?
You are a mountain of nothing.
Jonnet, we've talked about how art is an expression of your soul, and your soul is a fire, and yours burns bright. It starts in your heart, it spreads up to your head, through your eye, and through that, the universe. Power from the world around you pours into you and radiates from you, and that extends from the center of your being through your limbs, and most importantly, through your hands. The fire creeps up, consumes your hand and your palm, bearing down on that mark that tethers you to this thing. And as it approaches, The mariner strikes forward, screams, but you spit your words like bullets. They eviscerate this creature before you. It gets weaker and weaker. The tendrils of bone and seawater, of bilge and debris, they hasten towards you. They try to strike at you, snuff out this bright light that comes for it. But they can't touch you because your connection is severed. Severed by the fire that you summoned forward when you declared yourself. Your mariner's mark disappears. And without the mark to tether the mariner to the pocket space, he disappears.
As this is happening, I feel like Jonnet feels this tether get severed. And as like it is rescinding, Jonnet kind of, with his left hand, the previously marked hand, puts it up, gives a very casual wave, and is like, the next time you see me, it will be your end. Bye-bye.
You'd hope for that. You'd hope for that!
I said, bye-bye.
Banished.
Wow, Jonathan, that was something.
I think I'm going to pass out now.
Gosh, you remind me of a younger me. You were burning bright. You have the talent. I was going to say, do you even need my instruction? Do you even need the Liquid Sword's instruction? Look at what you just did. That was absolutely brilliant. And I think the answer is yes, you do need it. I would love to provide the opportunity for you to refine these skills,
so
refine your conviction.
Okay.
Now that you know and have shown who you are, I want to give you the opportunity to fine-tune these skills and teach you the skills of the masters. You've reignited this fire in me.
Lex, don't stop. Yeah. While this is happening, Jonnet is like slowly
fire in me and
crawling to the floor of the pocket space.
I don't remember the last time that I was like, and then felt like this
he like
about
reaches for like
swords.
A pretend rock
so
and like puts it underneath
I
his head.
Came in contact with you because I was about to lose all hope. With my experience there, I was jaded, I was cynical, and...
And Jonnet passes out in an astral sense.
Oh, I might have pushed him too hard.
And I think the pocket space fades away, and we return to that rock under the cover of night over Du Mignon. Jonnet, who is leaning his forehead forward into Wei's chest to touch his eye to the eye and their neck. Jonnet passes out, his head falling into Wei's lap.
What a guy.
Wei, I think it's time that you give Jonnet the tools that he will need to find the monastery. And I think this is something that you can do while Jonnet is passed out. I think it'll still make sense. With this, just describe for me the scene that will precede the final track where you give Jonnet the temple poem.
I think that I would use water to carve into the rock.
Ooh.
Yeah, to carve directions into the rock so that when they wake up, when he wakes up, he'll have a map and know where to go. And so, so as he's passed out and he's asleep, Wei manifests these water swords or, you know, multiple blades of water. And, you know, next to a sleeping Jonnet, carves out on the top of this rock, you know, shaves the rock away, creating pathways and roads and directions, landmarks.
I think done in a way that is through the lyrics of the temple poem.
Mm-hmm.
The temple poem that Jonnet has already gotten a few lines to. Those lines and bars are what guided Jonnet here to Wei in the first place. And through these symbols that you carve, it might just be in like that iconographic language that is part of the poetry at the temple itself.
Yes.
Like you carve these lyrics and they are the map. A person with the heart and mind of a Star Watcher will be able to take these lyrics and use them to guide themselves to the temple. Just like when, after your experience with the lily so long ago, you were open to the universe in a Wei that gave you these very same lyrics that helped you find your own Wei.
Yeah. I had my doubts, but he's proven to be well-deserving. He's more than ready, by the memories I was just observing. He's been through hell, and in spite of it, he rose above. Selfish in a selfless Wei, ambitious yet driven by love. I thought him soft, but I was wrong. He's got more guts than me. I honestly can't wait to see what he'll grow up to be. Though it's a journey that he must go alone, I'll show the Wei to the place that I once called home. So, deep in the mountains, covered in glaciers, cryovolcanoes, valleys and caves all woven by nature. Rivers cascading from snowy peaks, flowing tandem like silent marauders. If you feel like you're trapped in a maze, all you gotta do is just follow the water. Follow the water, water is power, water is a dread and a miracle. Our goal is to source us to mold and control all its forms like it said all those years ago. We hold to his word, do you know what you heard? Don't play us, we know where it hurts. I say to the elders before us, make it numb to the boy who has shown us his worth. And by the time that Jonnet awakes, he will have that available to him. And Wei will be gone.
And I'm curious, as the sun starts to rise over Dumignon, as the night starts to fade and day begins to herald itself, Wei had mentioned feeling as though their soul was alight once more. They look at the horizon. What do they feel? Where are they going? What do they need to do?
They feel hope and direction. And they want to return to the Liquid Swords.
Heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the moment you have all been waiting for. The newest generic mid-roll is out. That's right, this one is updated, and it's more generic than ever.
Just so everybody knows, I'm doing generic mid-rolls because I recently had a baby. Heroes, our captain, our very own Nathan Blades, has designed a brand new role-playing game called The Ballad of Conjurers. It was inspired by JRPGs and the melodrama that they are famous for. And you can pick it up right now on Itch for just $5. You can find it by looking Nathan Blades up on Itch or by following the link in our show notes. Heroes, I've also got something new coming out. I wrote a direct follow-up to my very first book, The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide, called The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition. Basically, we took the concept of prompts and exercises to help you develop backstories for characters at your role-playing table, or really any original characters you want to work on, that use game mechanics to make the process easy and fun,
And we expanded it way past the fantasy adventure genre, while also including exercises for fantasy adventure. If you're the type of person who loves thinking about your characters or characters in any property that you love, I highly recommend picking up this book. It's coming out in June, but you can pre-order it right now. And pre-ordering is super important. Not only does it tell the bookstores that people are interested in this book, but it tells my publisher that people are interested in this book, and it helps me publish more books and therefore support myself and my family. You can pre-order a copy now by heading to bit.ly/RPGBackstory2, and that's 2 as in the numeral 2, or by going anywhere books are sold and signing up for a pre-order. That is all major online retailers, every major brick and mortar bookstore, and of course your favorite indie brick and mortar bookstores. And I always recommend you go to an indie bookstore or a friendly local game store to order a copy because it helps out so many people. So put yourself down for a pre-order for the Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition today. With that said, I want to thank Lex the Lexicon Artist for joining us as a guest for this arc. In addition to our regular game, for this arc, we're playing Starcrossed, the two-player Forbidden Romance RPG. Starcrossed was designed by my dear friend and former network member, Alex Roberts, and is published by Bully Pulpit Games. You can pick up your own copy of Starcrossed by following the link in our show notes. A big thank you to all the cast and crew who are involved in producing the music for this arc. That is not just our guest for the arc, Lex the Lexicon Artist, but it's also Arnie Parrott, our house musician, Tyler Davis, who you're going to be hearing later on, James Mendez Hodes, who wrote some lyrics for one of the songs that'll be appearing much later on in the arc, and of course Casey Tony, our editor, for choosing when and where it appears in the show. And also a huge thank you to Tracy Barnett, who assisted Casey Tony on the editing for this arc. As always, one of the biggest thank yous goes to our Patreon patrons who made everything you're listening to possible by supporting the show. Let's thank them right now. Thanks to everyone who supports us already and everyone who's going to support us in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
Ormar looks up to the Vrasulka and signs with that hand, and falteringly and kind of stutteringly, we shook on your assistance, but also to knowledge shared. I want to know how I can become a luminary.
Look to the pitiable creatures behind you. Do you know what they are? And you can see the gathered robes of the cutting stone sitting in the thick shadows of the forest behind you.
If Orimar could actually visibly emote, I think they would have found it very hard to keep their cool. But under current circumstances, that's much easier.
Yeah, if you're nervous about public speaking, just be dead.
You know?
That's a big help to calm the nerves. Huge help.
Makes a lot easier.
Yeah, just turn your entire insides to a bunch of puppet strings, and then suddenly not showing your emotions becomes really easy. Three simple steps. Mm-hmm. In my very expensive webinar, I'll tell you how to.
So expensive.
Doctors hate him because he does advise death.
Yes, Orimar, unable to show concern for the fact that the cutting stone are very close, says, I have been able to resist their inexorable pull so far. And with care and cleverness and my crew, I will continue to avoid them until it is no longer necessary to do so.
Oh, you should consort with the fallen friend in your heart more often. He glimpsed the truth of what they are shortly before he lost his body. Well, you will pay a different price for this knowledge. They are not different than myself and Uriel. They are fallen. fallen carved away until just this flickering instance of themselves remains. And they have grafted themselves onto mortal souls to act as wardens of the river, as though my guardianship is not enough. And so they have been called the Cutting Stone, the shades that claim life out of hands of mercy rather than hands of cruelty. In many stories, but I believe you understand that these stories are quite different. And that's what it comes down to, Orimar Vale. What story are you telling? What story do you think the world needs to hear?
Orimar offers a too wide, slightly twitching smile as they continue to get their body under control. It's approaching kind of normal operations again. Onto mortal souls. Well, I suppose we have more in common than I expected. The story I want to tell has been passed down among generations upon generations of the Bandari people, and the rest of Sphere have forgotten, but I shall make them remember. It is a story that is catastrophic to forget.
I know there is goodwill in those words, Orimar Vale. I also know there is stubbornness and pride. I will not try to talk you out of them, but I will say that is the element that you are missing. You hold in yourself a very powerful fragment of an old and dead story, brought low by the friend that you stand next to and hold on to for strength as we speak. What you do with that fragment and how you tell a new story, that will shape your destiny. The thing that you desire may yet be grasped by you. And you may yet still be pulled into the river. But as I have said, neither path is clear enough for me to render a judgment. So we mayhaps may meet on these banks once again. For you will have to face the river before you claim your prize, like so many before you.
I have managed to learn a few things in my recent time with my crew. And one of them is that the physical form you take is less important than the body of work. The captain winks. You can craft. Even if my body falls into the river and my soul is dragged down with it, the pride and history and legacy of the Bandari people will not be erased, not by angels who have come down to Sphere and taken root here. Not today, and not while my story is still being told.
Well, then let us both pray that you have more to learn ahead of you. But with that, our accord is struck. I will see to Jonnet as you have asked me to see to him. For the rest, I say farewell. And good luck against the Cutting Stone.
She wraps her arms around Raoul, pulls him into the river, floating on his back, and it flows in the opposite direction, carrying him up into the land, far from the sea and the swamp, towards what will account for Rusalka's safety. we got you. The cutting stone is in the forest.
Yada, yada, yada.
I kind of want to just draw a luminary to see how this goes and see if we can, like, resolve it that
way. We gave her a lot of stuff. What if she just picks us up and puts us in a
hot tub?
Let's get another hole and get us out of here.
Yeah, she can teleport us places. We've established that.
Yeah. Put me in a well. I'll go another well.
Yeah, I don't know that we have that option.
Wendell and Nodos, are they waiting for you to return?
Oh.
Are they just kind of standing on the other side of the pool being like, I sure hope they haven't drowned.
Let me go back in my hole. We'll all go back in my hole. And then we're going to go to the caves.
Okay, so everybody's going to go into Gable's hole?
Yes, my big wet hole.
I think the fans will like it.
What happened while I was gone?
I think the fans will like it.
What the fuck happened while I wasn't here?
My big wet hole is still ready for anyone who needs it.
All right. Okay. Okay.
I quit the show now.
I'm gone for a sum total of 4 hours.
Don't worry about it.
I told one open brackets, numeral one close brackets, dirty joke, and this is where we are.
I'm just saying the factual facts.
We're all standing in front of Gable's big wet hole that's just ready. Okay. Okay. Here's what I will allow. You have done that once before. The pressure is on, but you do think you know a way back that connects this area to that cave.
Travis is also a bird. Bird can't swim.
Hey, watch me.
Cut to dead Travis.
Dead I mean, also, like, he's got that axolotl in there, so he could have gills at any point.
I could just change whatever I want.
That would be actually fantastic for you to discover that mid-dive into the water, being like, this was a bad plan, I can breathe.
I'm gonna turn into a fucking fish. I don't give a shit anymore. I can do it.
Y'all see in the forests, like, the gathered cutting stone. And they begin to emerge in a walk without footsteps. You see dozens of gray hooded forms make their way out of the forest towards this beach that again brings the sea, swamp, and river together. And we can see Orimar is rattled and tired. And Travis, although he looks pretty grandiose as a raven with antlers, is in a similar state to Orimar. Gable, you have been doing this math, kind of as all of this stuff with Rusalka was going on.
Tyler, you missed a lot.
What?
We'll figure it out.
Your expression was
Travis
good.
Got weirder?
Yeah.
I'll turn everyone into fish.
No.
I don't give a fuck.
What do you do?
So we're just like in a glade, right?
Yeah.
And cutting stone is like can't go any further than.
No, they used to not be able to go any further because Rusalka was holding them back. Now, not so much. Now they are coming towards your group.
Okay. Gable knows that the well that they came out of is part of the river, so it's still under Rusalka's purview. And that's kind of the only thing they could think of. Like, okay, Orimar doesn't need to breathe, can be down there as long as they want. Travis probably will be fine as long as he doesn't super drown. Only like half drowns is fine. So they grab a vine as soon as they can and like tie it to the captain's waist, and they grab up Travis and like put him in their coat and say, we have to go. We're going to be jumping into this well, and it'll be fine on the other side. We gotta go, okay?
And I'm gonna pull a luminary for this, and I'm doing it here now because if we have another miracle, I want to see it happen.
But you can see the cards.
I will shuffle them again.
No, but they're facing you, James.
Yeah, okay. You know what? The cards will just be facing you. They're going to have to face someone because I don't know how to get this angle otherwise.
But then if they're like facing us, you can see them in the camera.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Okay. So we're going to can you tell me where you can see these cards?
Yes.
That's good. That's perfect.
This is the only acceptable way to do this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What's that? The children.
The children. All right.
Angelic protection, you say?
Yeah, the children in The Hazards of Love, specifically the force that smites the enemies of the lovers while they're in the river. I believe the children deal with the rake. And it was never clear to me in the song whether the children were the unborn child of the changeling and Margaret, or whether they were the rake's murdered kids there to deliver revenge. I feel like it could be read both ways. But let's see. The children, consequence, inevitability, and eternity. Also, fun fact, the children also have the alternate name of the angels. And the angel has a reed of its own that is duty, justice, and wrath. Yeah, so I kind of think that we have like these sort of what we've learned, the cutting stone, angels that have been whittled away into their core parts with all of their wings carved away, many of their human features carved away. Angels don't necessarily have souls, as their physical form is in many ways their spiritual form as well. But once everything is carved away, there is still something that remains, and that is the angel itself. And bonded onto a human soul, it creates the shades of the cutting stone. And so, Gable, you have like these pitiable fallen brethren that are after you. And you know that there is a well that connects this location to the place that you just emerged from, and you have to face drowning to do it. I'm going to read this divination. Nothing was unobserved, and a reckoning is coming. Versus, what's the interpretation for the angels? For the righteous, the angel suggests a responsibility that looms that must be tended. One who does not answer their call risks destroying something essential about themselves. If you are righting a wrong, the angel gives you license to act with brutal certainty. For the wicked, the angel spells doom. For the weak, the angel might bring respite and peace.
I have a thought.
Go for it.
So, like, identifying where the pool is, because it's obviously not easy to see, Gable is sort of just, like, putting their hands in the water, trying to feel out, like, whatever the tail end of Rusalka before she left, calling out, like, this one last plea, like, hey, these people won't be able to fulfill their obligations to you if they die right now.
Let's have you do that in character, actually. I would love to hear that plea.
Hello, sister. Just so you know, thank you so much for all these revelations. It was lovely to see you. This choir, if it absorbs your new pledges, they won't be able to fulfill their obligations to you. So I take upon myself the full pain of drowning if you can guarantee us passage through this mighty river. Please, now, immediately, please, 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 please.
I like that. I like that.
The visual, if this is too creepy, of just dozens of tiny hands reaching up out of the water to pull them down.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, the water reaches up with these hands. I think the arms that reach out of the water are the arms of Rusalka's brides, essentially. Those who have wed themselves to the river, as opposed to those who were pulled under forcibly as punishment. So, you know, these are the arms of the sad souls who have decided to approach Rusalka to wed her and enter death willingly. And occasionally they are called upon, and they answer that call now. They pull Gable in, and Gable, as you are pulled into the water, you can feel the water being forced down your throat and into your lungs. But you have opted to take on the full pain of drowning for your group. And so you drown three times, which is, I think that is the same number of times that you drown when you drown in the ocean after you fell to Earth. Unless I am mistaken.
It was, I think it was quite a bit.
Was it 10 times? I can't remember. I thought it was 10 days that you floated and 3 times that you drowned. But,
you would,
you know,
remember
the fans will correct
I.
that record. Yeah. hey, if it is, pretty cool that we obviously very accidentally arrived at that number because we can't remember shit.
We don't
pay off on themes. They just happen.
Committed a thought that I've said to my own memory. It's like a Tickle Me Elmo. This is just like constantly, these are the things I programmed to say. There's nothing here.
there's some predeterminism in that. It's like, yeah, Liz is just programmed to say the things that she's going to say on this podcast.
Uh-huh. Never pegged you for a fatalist yet.
Hey, we love nihilism, baby.
Hey.
But yeah, you are rushed through the complex web of interconnected caverns that makes up this cave system beneath Dumignon, and you arrive at the mouth of the trial cave, slowly drowning again and again as you go. Orimar, obviously, your body cannot drown. Travis, though, I'm really interested what your experience of this situation is.
With drowning in general?
Yeah, how are you not drowning right now? Like, what does it feel like to not be drowning right now? It probably there's a little bit of trauma resurfacing in this, as once again, it is somebody drowning in your stead. But yeah, you're just nestled in Gable's little pocket.
I think that it is challenging, but I think that Travis is a bit, got a lot of adrenaline going on right now because some pretty cool shit just went down. So I think I think at first it's like a, here we go. And then it's like, oh wait, like it's all good. And also I just found out I'm a god. So
the wrong lesson.
It's gonna be okay, I think. Yeah, Tyler, you missed a lot.
Wait. I just want to ask, like, because I mean, in Jonic's arc, while y'all weren't here, did everybody just like level the fuck up?
Oh,
like 2-3 times.
Wait, what happened to
knowledge wise?
Knowledge wise.
Oh, okay.
We just learned a bunch of silly stuff.
Yeah. Jonnet, not much happened to Jonnet. He did defeat the Mariner.
Again?
I guess. Again? Mm.
Again?
Yeah. Just again.
It just keeps happening. He keeps coming for me.
You'd think he'd learn.
All right, let's get back into it.
Yeah. So you get pulled through these tunnels into the trial tunnel into, I gave this stupid fucking feather a goddamn name.
The plume of...
Yeah, the plume crew. That's it.
Mm.
Is that the one like that was on Rusalka? So I didn't get that. Okay.
You didn't get that one. Decided, in fact, specifically that you would not get that one.
I thought it was a different one. I thought I got the reward at the bottom of the well and then there was a different one. But it was just the same one.
No, you just suffered, basically.
You just suffered. But,
it's fine.
You know, it built character.
That's fine.
So it was worth it. But yeah, you emerge into the cavern of Le Plume Crew. I think as soon as there is a sound of someone coming out of the water, like Gable obviously like pulls themselves up out of the water. Yeah, and as tough as coughing is to hear and do, we do just do some of that as you expel all of the river water from your lungs. And Nodos, as soon as he hears you, is at the door and helps you to your feet.
John, could you get that box over there for the dusting? It's going to be too heavy for me.
Well, okay.
I can do that spit, but also, so far, every single box that we've been moving today has been too heavy for you, and I just don't know if you should be on box duty.
Well, I am a gentleman of years old, and I shouldn't be lifting
boxes.
Why
did that bird fly right in front of your mouth when you said your the number? Say the number again.
I'll say it clearly. I'll shout it so everyone can hear. I'm years old.
Okay, you just caught.
And I'm proud.
I have a hypothesis. I don't think spit can count. Spit, how many fingers am I holding up?
Wait. Looky here. Looky here. Travis, Jonnet, behind this box.
No. We will get to the box when it's box time again. But now.
No, I swear. This isn't something sexual. This is not something sexual that I'm trying to show you.
You're
behind this box.
How many? Behind how many boxes?
Yes. There is a stack of boxes right now that you are pointing to that need to be moved. How many boxes are in that stack?
I mean, a cargo load, I'd say.
Spit. All right. I'm just saying, it's totally fine if you cannot count, okay? But if you cannot count, you need to not be in charge of inventory day.
Jonnet, I swear to God, if this man is only like 14 years old, I am going to lose my mind.
No.
Spit steps behind the stack of boxes, and you can hear his voice in what sounds like an echoey, cavernous place.
Unbelievable!
Push the boxes back. This is our chance.
And then Jonnet puts some more boxes in front of those boxes. And then boxes. I assume we're in some kind of cage. And so Jonnet and Travis leave the cage. Jonnet closes the door. And they're like, okay, if you can hear us, you can count. You can come out when you can count the boxes.
Bumping into you behind you is spit.
You're never going to believe this. There's a room back there. There's a room back there with a hidden passageway that takes you out here.
In a reflex.
I will honor the goddamn prompt. I'm going to honor the prompt.
Travis crawls into the doorway and he finds himself looking back at Jonnet. But whatever Jonnet says, he's just saying, spit, 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 spit.
Oh, my God. So then...
I guess this is just for me.
Yeah. I'm trying to get there,
okay,
though.
Okay, Travis, Travis leaves.
No. Jonnet also goes into the the thing and sees people saying spit.
Orimar shows up after a while and turns to spit and gestures towards the box. Spit, 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 spit.
Spit, 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 spittily spit.
Well, spit, 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 spit. It's like pointing at all of the boxes and kind of like, spit, 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 spit.
Spit. Spit.
Spit.
Oh, spit.
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 All right, Douglas. So as you can see by page 13 of the pilot, it really kind of gets a little bit heady as far as the comedy goes. But I think that's interesting. I think that's something that people haven't seen before.
I mean,
I get it.
Yeah, there's definitely a market for that out there. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, You might want to change page 7 specifically, because I mean, aside from a couple typos, there's just a little. I really don't get the Sprinkles character.
Oh, I love Sprinkles, but Sprinkles has been a little bit divisive, as I
and
understand.
We flash forward to a coffee shop where Jonnet and Travis is and the cap. Everybody is like hanging out around the table, patiently waiting Gable's feedback. What did my dad say?
I'm going to be honest with you. His emotion was strong, and that emotion. Was delight. We did it, everyone.
We're greenlit.
We're greenlit.
Excellent.
We're greenlit.
Excellent work, everyone.
we can get out of the sky. We don't have to be pirates anymore.
No, we're going to Hollywood.
Oh, living on Easy Street. Hollybird.
Hollybird.
I like how that's the change.
That's how you make it skyjacks.
Hollybird, here we come, baby.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
Design Doc started as a podcast about designing a role-playing game. Over the years, it's turned into so much more. It's a show about the challenges of burnout, making money from creative projects, and what goes into bringing a game to life. Come along with Hannah and Evan in a living documentation of the game design process. One review described it as the audio equivalent of taking a hike with a good friend. You can search for Design Doc on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like Asians Represent. Asians Represent celebrates Asian creators and diversity in the gaming community. Join hosts Agatha Cheng and Daniel Kwan as they discuss gaming, genre, and representation with their guests and occasionally argue with each other about the sound of Agatha's beloved air horn app. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, Neo Scum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.